This is Authors Alcove, where writers learn from writers. Readers get the inside scoop, and everyone learns something. An episode comes out every Wednesday where writers share their latest work, every other Tuesday where us writers get taught by such experts as editors, book cover artists, and marketing execs, and beyond. So grab a cup of coffee, and let's dive into our next book.
Welcome to Authors Alcove. My name is Agnes Wolf. Today I have Jean Lamb. She is the fantasy author of Dead Man's Hand. It is the first book in the Ghost Ship series. She writes Harry Potter fan fiction. I am a huge Potterhead as well. And she is a member of the SFWA. We'll talk a little bit about that in just a moment. And she has published 7 books, is a former United States Air Force officer, and spent half a century married to the love of her life with a cat and 10,000 books. Today, we will discuss her book setting in Renaissance Italy and its theme of revenge, how she gets her book cover artists, as well as her books known, and how she uses spreadsheets while she writes, as well as a little bit about her fan fiction. So welcome, Jean. How are you today?
I'm doing great.
Thank you for joining us. Do you mind just sharing a little bit about yourself and what got you into the writing world?
Well, part of it is that my father was a science fiction and fantasy collector. I read a lot of classic stories in their original professional zine format. And then I talk about how if I wanted to write science fiction, I just walked out and grabbed some. And people who had the fight to read science fiction say, tell me how much they hate me. When my father died, I actually inherited his collection. So I grew up in a world where I basically learned how to read on the Robert Heinlein, juveniles. And so it was always part of me, the science fiction and fantasy. The idea of building alternate worlds just sounded like fun. So I do have some professional short story publications. That the Galley Slave was published in Mankins and Ward's number 8. And also in the 1998 analog. That was actually kind of paid for fan fiction in the world of, one of the worlds that Larry Niven has set up. So I'm just saying, I'm getting paid for fan fiction. I'm good.
Nice. So one of the things that I haven't really talked on my show yet is the SFWA. And you said that you are a member. Do you mind sharing what that is and why you decided to join?
Yes, it's the Science Fiction Writers of America. And you have to have, 3 professional short story publications, in magazines that pay so much. And so I have those publications. That's the Galley Slave, the Broom's Tale in a horror magazine, and Esprit de Corps in another horror magazine. And those were the 3 publications that qualified. Now they have changed their qualifications. So if you can prove that you have made so much publishing on Amazon or some other independent format, they also allow that for qualification. And it's easy to prove what you've made on Amazon because they send you a 1099 every year. And also they send you a spreadsheet of your particular sales during a year for whichever project. And so the verification process is pretty easy. Science fiction writers of America want to encourage people to write for venues where they can make money.
So is this just for science fiction? Because I thought it was for science fiction and fantasy.
And in fantasy. Yeah, well, one time they had the acronym SFWA, but then they decided just to go back to SFWA with the understanding that fantasy was, grandfathered in.
Well, so now let's just talk a little bit about your book. Could you please share just a little bit about The Dead Man's Hand without giving away any spoilers, just the basic plot?
Okay, well, basically, Tonio Vitor is a spoiled second son of a prominent family, in a little bitty country called Cuda, and Cuda thinks it's a lot more important than it actually is, but lots of little countries are like that. And so there's a plot against his family by another family. And so when he comes home, from a stay at a fantasy university, the house is on fire, his family is in danger, and he goes in to try to rescue them. In the process, he's badly burned. He vows revenge. And he changes his name because nobody's going to believe who he is anyway with his face all ruined. And besides which, he plans to get revenge in ways that might tarnish the actual family name. As the book goes, the Ravine Gambrel personality starts taking over. And so he's a gambler, after his being burned, he can now see ghosts, and which is sometimes good and sometimes very annoying. He sails around the countries of the inner sea, and he establishes himself as quite a personage that way.
So the book is actually set in Renaissance Italy. You said without gunpowder, but with a little bit of magic.
With lots of magic.
Lots of magic. Okay.
Lots of magic.
So what inspired you to choose that particular time frame?
Well, for one thing, reading about Renaissance Italy, I actually took a course in it, at Oregon State University. I'm just saying, this was a fun period of time if you want to torture characters or to have characters have fun in, because the Renaissance Italy had all kinds of small city-states warring against each other. You had Leonardo da Vinci designing war machines. You had Michelangelo, painting the Sistine Chapel, creating, tremendous art. It was just an amazing, place to be, except, of course, when the plague came through, but, that was bad. Well, the position of women wasn't that great, but there was always room for somebody of a forceful personality to not get left in the shadows. There were a lot of Renaissance women that were, pretty hardcore and that were merchants in their own right.
So what type of research did you do to be able to depict Renaissance Italy well?
Well, part of it is I got out my old college books. I got the Vasari's Lives of the Artists, because these artists had personal lives that you're just going, whoa, People magazine, hello. They just, because people are people and they're going to get in trouble. They're going to choose, badly when they're in love. Most of them are going to drink too much. And Vasari's Lives of the Artists is written by a contemporary of Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Raphael, and the rest of them. And he wasn't afraid to put in the stuff that would help sell the book, which meant more stuff about their personal lives, as well as the great works of art and what he thought about them. Vasari was an artist himself, so he could evaluate art in a more professional way than most biographers. There's also many Renaissance books, by women, whose names escaped me at the time, but they're easy to find. Also reading about the life of Dante and the fun city politics of Florence that made him run for his life will sound really familiar to a lot of people these days.
Definitely. So this is both a ghost story and a revenge story. How do the ghosts play a part into the story?
Oh, definitely, because as Gambrel actually sometimes takes the advice of ghosts, which is not always a good thing. There's another character who ends up being possessed by an ancestor's ghost, and this turns out to be a really bad thing, because this guy had a choice of, ancestor's ghost to help him, and he definitely chose the wrong one. And the thing is that the inner sea is haunted, by the ghosts of those people who died at sea as well. Although he doesn't see ghosts when he's actually at sea, and he kind of likes that part. But when he goes on to shore, the ghosts of the dead sailors, kind of wash up there. He really has to ignore them sometimes when he's in a conversation. There's also a bunch about gambling in there. And my husband and I spent some time in Las Vegas. We are not heavy hitters. If we take a $20 bill and it takes us 2 hours to lose it, we're good for the day. But it's easy to observe what goes on in the casinos and what the rules are in casinos. And so I borrow some of those for the casinos that, let's say, Gabriel goes to. I also stole stuff from The Life of Casanova. See, he's not anywhere near as vigorous as Casanova, but there were some things that Casanova did on the side that I said, oh, that's good research. Mine now.
So your story is also a story of revenge. What were some of the fun parts of writing a story with revenge in it?
Because sometimes it's fun to let your evil twin Skippy loose and do all the things that you're probably not supposed to do, but seem like fun at the time.
What are some things that he does for revenge that were kind of fun to write?
Well, he deliberately pretends to fall in love with someone so they will give him information about the people he's looking for. Most of the time, he does act pretty honorably, but he knows that he's capable of doing things and, again, does not want to tarnish the Vittor name with what he's going to do as Gambrel. Again, as time goes on, he will see, the Gambrel personality starts taking over, because Gambrel has a whole lot more fun that Tonio Vittor never had. Tonio Vittor would have been a notable person even as Tonio Vitor, because he was not going to stay home and help run the family enterprise. He was going to go out sailing and exploring. But Gambrell is free from those family connections. And so he knows he's free to do things that he couldn't do as Tonio Vitor. And actually, he becomes much greater as time goes by than Tonio Vitor ever could have been.
So you have actually written a total of 8 books total, including this one, one of them that has not yet published.
Right.
So you're pretty familiar with how to get cover for your book completed. Where do you find your cover artist, and do you use the same person or do you hire different people based on the project?
Well, it depends, because I first used Malcolm Horton for both the first 2 Tamron books and the first Gambrell book, because I was looking for fantasy artists who had this kind of look I wanted. And so I just kind of ran around saying fantasy artists and started, looking at people's online galleries. And then Malcolm Horton, he's a Briton, actually. And so he and I talked to each other about what I wanted in the cover. And then he gave me a draft cover. And I said that Gambrell dresses more flashy than, flashier than that. And so could you, throw in some more bling? And he did. And that's what the covers that we have for Dead Man's Hand. Now, the second book, In the Shade, I happen to know a artist named Bob Eagleton. He's a Hugo winning artist who I'm friends with on Facebook. And he does almost a whole bunch of the professional Godzilla posters for movie companies. But he also does Oceanscapes. And so I said, hey, Bob, if I pay you so much, will you do me a cover? And he said, I have rent to pay. Cool beans. When do you need it? It's easy for me to work with the overseas artists as well, even though, Bob himself is American, because PayPal will convert money into currency for a small fee.
What are some things that you think about when you're working with a cover artist?
Basically, is do I like the style of the work? Do I like the kind of lighting he uses? Will they take, suggestions about what I want on the cover? And then we basically discuss it over email before the artist does any work. And then most of the time, when I get a cover, it's really close to what I want. And at most, it would have to do a little bit of touch-up. And so I have found it really easy to work with cover artists. Now, there are also people who do what I call pre-made fantasy covers. And so I cruise through those. And if I can grab a cover for like less than $100, that's real close to what I want, I'm just saying, oh, hello. So, and I also, I am not really great on doing the lettering. And so sometimes I get the basic cover. But there's a really nice woman who does, she works under the name of Spittyfish Designs. She does very good graphic lettering that matches the ambiance of the cover. And so I pay her the money to do that rather than me sitting there for an hour and a half trying to get my font right.
So how do you get your books known once they are published, they have their cover, and they are on Amazon or Ingram Sparks?
Well, I belong to some email lists. I'm a member of the Louis McMaster Bujold fan list. And some of my, some of the people who buy anything I write are out there. I also talk about it on Facebook. I talk about it on podcasts like this one. And I have a really wide acquaintance of people, on Facebook who are in the professional SF field. I'm going to put other places that I put Dead Man's Hand on Book Cave. So, and I got some nice sales out of that, which I was very happy about. So basically nag my relatives, like every writer does, and say, please buy my book.
So you're also a retired accountant. My best friend is actually also an accountant. And I know that one thing that you guys love is your spreadsheets. And you mentioned that you had loved using your spreadsheets to help you with your writing. How do you use it and how does it help you with your writing?
Well, first of all, I keep a spreadsheet of all my proposed writing projects. And then I write down what progress I have made on each project. And so I don't forget, how many books did I want in that series and what are the titles again? And so because I have like 30 more books planned. I probably won't live long enough to write them, but I do have them planned out more or less. So I have the spreadsheet I put on, first draft, typing revision, formatting, and then up when they're published, I put in publish with a great big yellow highlight because I'm very happy about that. Another thing I do is that the two series I have going right now are in the same area. And at some point, some of these people will meet each other. And so I have one giant spreadsheet of the major characters in both series of what they're doing at each particular year, a fake calendar. And so when they meet each other, I will know how old they are and what they've been through. This is a big help because, like I said, eventually, some of the characters from one series will meet the other. And so I will know what they all been up to when they do.
I actually use a lot of spreadsheets for my writing as well, keeping track of, when people meet. So that way the timelines do not end up crossing, and also that the facts remain the same, that I don't accidentally change, who met when, who, where, what.
Well, yes, that spreadsheet I have where I have, what people were doing in what year is really helpful. That's going to be more helpful as the series, both series go on.
So another thing that you do is you actually write fan fiction, and you said you actually get paid for it. And I am a huge Potterhead as well. So I love Harry Potter. I started reading it before it was really super popular. So do you mind just sharing a little bit about your Harry Potter fan fiction, what got you started and what you like to write about?
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to make it clear, I do not get paid for Harry Potter fan fiction. Rowling has made it a condition of fan fiction writers that they do not get paid for it or try to sell their work.
Okay.
And so I'm very good about obeying that part. Let's see, we call it the anti-litigation spell. So, and let's see, I use the name Excessively Perky. I write, a lot about Snape. My husband was a chemistry teacher. And so he brought home great stories of chemistry teaching that I have stolen for Harry Potter fan fiction. Especially the story about one kid who was copied a test and who was so dumb he copied the other person's name as well as his own. That is a real story. Any teacher will tell you, great stories that I share to other teachers and civilians. And so, and some of the demos and other procedures that I have Snape use in his potions labs are procedures that my husband used in his labs, especially the safety ones. I also enjoy other characters. I like working with Ron Weasley because he gets overlooked as a sidekick so much. And Harry Potter puts up with the people that do some awful things to Ron and that Ron should actually kind of resent. Like Sirius Black broke Ron's leg, but Harry loves Sirius Black and Ron has to kind of suck it up.
Where do you write your fan fiction? Where do you promote it?
It's exclusively on fanfiction.net. I know that if I start working with AO3, Archive of Our Own, that if I dive into there, I will never come up and get anything ever written again. I tried to keep to just, fanfiction.net because I get, now that they have finally fixed their email alert problem, which was bad for a couple of months, I get notices that I'm supposed to get of the authors that I'm following and whenever they put up a new chapter.
I know, obviously, Harry Potter has impacted you, but what other authors, books, or series have impacted you as a writer?
The books of Lois McMaster-Bujold, because the Miles Vorkosigan series and the Penric and his Demon series. She writes novellas and an occasional novel, and she puts them up for Penric, and she just puts them up on Amazon without going through Bain Books. And, there's apparently enough Instabuy people out there to read anything that she wrote that she manages to do rather well that way. It has been some while since she's wrote a Miles Vorkosigan book, but we live in hope, and we're happy to have the work that she just does put up. I also grew up on the classic SF writers like Arthur C. Clarke, Robert Heinlein, and Isaac Asimov, because those are the ones I read when I was a kid. Also Theodore Sturgeon, who had some, 60s, a summer of love type of ideas about human relationships, which were hard to convey in a 1950s novel, but he managed to, to sneak them in anyway.
Well, thank you very much for sharing all of that. There is a question that I ask everybody. And so yes. I do want to ask you that before we go. What is one piece of advice that you would give to a not yet published author?
Just keep writing. Now, the traditional publishing world is hard. I'm too old to play dances with agents right now. And with so many publishing houses consolidating and some really good middle list authors being dumped because they don't make enough profit, it's going to be hard to make it into traditional publishing. People do it all the time. But people have also made it into traditional publishing through being really popular on Amazon. Let's see, the guy who wrote the Wool books, let's see, did it only on ebooks for a while. And let's see, and when he finally went traditional publishing, he gave them only the print book rights and kept all the ebook rights. He was in a position to be able to do that. And of course, the miracle story is E.L. James and 50 Shades of Grey. Another miracle story is Andy Weir and the Martian, which he published a chapter at a time on his blog. And people said that, well, if you send me the whole thing, I'll pay you a dollar for the whole thing together rather than have to go through and download each chapter. And once he started doing that, we know what happened with the Martian, don't we? Those are the miracle stories that probably are not going to happen to most writers. It sure hasn't happened to me. But I have also worked on establishing a universe and a couple of different series, you know, that pretty much are in the same universe, that if the lightning does hit, they have a whole bit backlist to go through, you know, to buy and read. Yes, there are some writers who work a lot harder on promotion than I do, like Chris and Catherine Rush and MCA Hogarth. And they seem to be pretty happy with their careers. But I'm aware that I should probably spend more time on promotion, but right now I'm spending time on the writing.
That makes sense. For me, that's the more important part, is the writing as far as like edifying to myself. Although you do have to do the marketing, because otherwise nobody's going to read it.
Well, yes. And I do some marketing, but mostly to, like, you know, the friends on my email list and friends on Facebook. And let's see, my profile on, fanfiction.net indicates that I have professional books on Amazon. And so occasionally I do get somebody asking me about those.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of Authors Alcove. We will be back next week on Wednesday, where we will have a writer share yet another piece of work. Also, every other Tuesday, we do learn from experts such as editors, marketing execs, book cover artists, illustrators, and more. If you are interested in being a guest on our show, feel free to go to authorsalcove.com, go to the podcast tab, and then click on Be a Guest. If you're looking for a healed heart, hop on over to our sister podcast, Strength, Love, and Healing with Authors Alcove. You can find that on Spotify and the Apple Podcast. Thank you so much for listening today. Have a great day.